Net neutrality is one of those problematic issues. Problematic in that it really shouldn't be a political one, but it became one. Both its supporters and its opponents misrepresent what the other side says it would mean, in an effort to fire up emotional reactions and build support. Chances are that whatever you think net neutrality means is at least partially informed by some of this misinformation. And that's coming up next on Skeptoid. Head on over to skeptoid.com/store and explore the Skeptoid store where curiosity meets cool. We have books, socks, shirts, hoodies, and more. Check out our slick new Bigfoot design, where the mystery of this legendary cryptid never looked so good. And while you're here, don't forget to grab a Skeptoid USB drive, your portal to all episodes and all our movies, now including the UFO movie They Don't Want You to See. That's not all we have planned. We have a lineup of way more cool stuff coming soon. So head on over, skeptoid.com/store, and snag your swag. This episode is sponsored in part by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. You're listening to Skeptoid. I'm Brian Dunning from Skeptoid.com. Net neutrality reexamined. Who wants anything less than free and unfettered access to everything they want on the internet? Well, nobody, of course. Everyone agrees that we want the fastest, freest internet we can get. The problem is we don't all agree on how to get there, and we don't all understand the implications of solving the technical challenges required. The central question is whether government regulations should require service providers to give consumers access to the internet with nothing blocked out, nothing slowed down. Today, we're going to log in to net neutrality and take a deep dive into the issues surrounding one of the hottest topics around right now. This take is going to be a bit different from others you may have heard. Rather than look at the history of net neutrality, current events driving it, and the laws, we're going to organize the issues visually to better understand the overall picture. The way I propose to think of net neutrality is to group the issues into a 2x2 grid. The left column is the arguments in favor of regulated neutrality. The right column is the arguments opposed to regulated neutrality. The top row contains the ideological concerns, and the bottom row contains the technical issues. Let's look at those top two squares. Our ideology row is, unfortunately, a dichotomy of straight-up political party lines. Liberals tend to favor neutrality through regulation, and conservatives tend to favor neutrality through competition. What this debate is really about is government regulation versus the free market. And you can blame these two most explosive of all political terms for why net neutrality has garnered so much public attention. For a conservative, there is no more antagonizing red flag to a bull than the term regulation. Just as to a liberal, there is no more antagonizing term than free market. Advocates of regulation believe that customers are best served when the government requires equal services be offered to everyone. And advocates of the free market believe that service providers competing for customers will naturally bring prices down and service quality up. And in the United States, that's about as close to a 50-50 split of the population as you'll find anywhere. And we have one big stumbling block when it comes to evaluating the effectiveness of the free market in providing unrestricted internet access. Free market solutions are dependent upon the consumer's ability to choose, to vote with their wallets. The problem here is that many people do not have two or more broadband providers to choose from. This is a simple fact of limited infrastructure. If there was fiber running to every house in the world, great. There's not. And in a lot of places where consumers do have a choice of broadband providers, often one or more of them are terrible, with slow speeds or poor reliability. Well, how many people in the United States have fewer than two good broadband providers to choose from? The answer is ha 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 ha. It's probably somewhere between 1/4 and 2/3, but good luck finding a trustworthily reported number. Just about every published number you can find has been wildly spun to fit some narrative. Reports from the left claim as many as 2/3 of people don't have a meaningful choice. Reports from the right claim only as few as 1/4 don't. And there's everything in between. But regardless, it's a very big non-zero. Even the lowest estimates represent a lot of people, far too many people for whom we could cripple an important service. Which raises the question, how important is the internet? Utilities like water and power can be argued to be life necessities. Even the telephone, since we need to be able to dial 911 in the U.S. Apologies to all you other listeners with other emergency numbers. Television, on the other hand, not so much. Many people choose to have no television, unlike necessities like water. What about the internet? Is it a necessity? It sure wasn't 25 years ago. But the world is shifting. Banking is being done online. Medical and other important services rely increasingly upon online scheduling. Email is a work necessity, and telecommuting is sometimes becoming mandatory. Many of those who have given up television and/or telephones have done so because the internet can replace them. We cannot treat the internet the same as we treat water, because it's not as essential. But it is becoming increasingly so. It truly is a unique service, and the direction it's going is in the direction of an essential service. So, who wins on our top row, the left or the right? It seems clear that at the current state of infrastructure, where it's not possible for many users to choose between providers, our green checkmark must be placed on the left. Regulations need to prevent internet providers from blocking or hampering certain services. However, if, in the future, infrastructure's improved to the point that everyone can have choices, then it'll make sense to have the conversation of how to balance regulation and the free market. Today, it does not, and by the time it does, the internet will be even more of a life necessity. Now we turn to the bottom row of our grid, the technical issues. On the left, technical arguments for unbridled neutrality. On the right, technical arguments for limited neutrality. Let's look at the basic example of internet on a plane. You buy the service and you find out that streaming video is blocked. No YouTube or Netflix on a plane. Why not? Because you would suck up all the bandwidth, and nobody else on the plane would be able to check their email or work on a Google Doc. It's necessary for the airline provider to impose this restriction to keep the service more useful for more people. It's an example of an absolutely necessary, fundamental violation of net neutrality. The airline example is a microcosm of every other internet environment. Your neighborhood broadband provider has to do this too. They generally do slow abusive users. Peer-to-peer file sharing networks, denial of service attacks, even streaming video. It's called traffic shaping. It's done on a dynamic basis all day long, and it's the basic principle for maintaining network quality of service. Your home broadband service would be terrible if your provider was not, right now, prioritizing some traffic and delaying other traffic. While most people would agree that traffic shaping is a good thing, many believe broadband providers shouldn't be anti-competitive when prioritizing their own services and throttling traffic that their competitors deliver, such as the infamous examples where certain providers who also offered telephone service were found to be throttling various rival services like voice over IP companies. But because bandwidth management is a full-time, round-the-clock job, there's no clear line that can be drawn between when hampering a competitive service is okay or not. Sometimes the competitor's service has higher usage and it must be throttled. Sometimes it has lower usage and can be prioritized. No legislation can effectively allow best practices in network management while simultaneously preventing service providers from throttling down their competition. The realities change by the minute. It's really almost an honor system.
Are you ready to take your Skeptoid experience to the next level? Head on over to skeptoid.com/gopremium to become a proud member and unlock a world of exclusive benefits. Picture this: ad-free listening and extended versions of every new episode, diving deep into the mysteries and real truth without interruption. Take this opportunity to elevate your journey and join the Skeptoid community today. Skeptoid.com/gopremium.
Here is an interesting question. Some percentage of internet traffic is illegal, mainly illegal file sharing, people stealing movies. When data centers employ traffic shaping, should they put a lower priority on illegal file sharing to benefit all legal traffic? Most people would agree, even many of those who support unfettered net neutrality. But doing so would be incredibly hard. We can't always tell which peer-to-peer file sharing is illegal. And even if we could, what's illegal? Hate speech? Who decides where to draw that line? Pandora's box goes ever deeper. But furthermore, from an infrastructure perspective, there's no such thing as a fair internet. The biggest content providers, Google, Facebook, Netflix, Akamai, Amazon, and others, are directly connected to Tier 1 networks, the highest level networks over which data flows worldwide without having to go through anyone else's routing, negotiation, or settlement. You and I don't have that. Some content providers are in countries with poor connectivity. By its very physical nature, the internet is not, and cannot practically ever be, a fair place. At least not without a lot of traffic shaping. So who wins on our bottom row, the left or the right? From a purely technical perspective, our green checkmark has to go on the right. The ability for service providers and data centers to freely throttle traffic at their own discretion is super important. If they lose that ability, then no other rules matter. Cisco is an example of a tech company that advocates for both boxes in the right-hand column of our grid, generally supporting the arguments of market competition and limited neutrality, keeping in mind that Cisco is a company whose business is network management hardware. I'll cite two of their principles listed in their online position paper. For our top row, ideology, they state,
"Consumers are entitled to competition among network providers, application and service providers, and content providers."
Thus falling into the free market category and placing them into the top right square of our grid. For the bottom row, they advocate for
the ability of broadband internet access service providers to engage in pro-competitive network management techniques to alleviate congestion, ameliorate capacity constraints, and enable new services.
Again, talking about facilitating competition, the free market, through network health. If traffic shaping technology can be employed to keep everything fast, then it's a level playing field for the service providers to compete by offering customers all sorts of packages, unhampered by poor performance. And quite predictably, the companies trying to deliver content over Cisco's equipment generally support unfettered net neutrality, landing in the left-hand column. Facebook is an obvious example. In a letter to the world, they wrote in the top left corner of our grid,
"Net neutrality ensures that anyone with an internet connection has a fair shot at turning an idea into something that can change the world. That would change if internet providers were allowed to decide what content its customers could access, or charge customers more to access the websites and services of their choice."
Obviously, very much against a free market type of solution. And in the bottom left corner of our grid, Facebook gives its technical thoughts.
"Net neutrality ensures that internet service providers are not allowed to block or throttle internet traffic or discriminate against certain content."
I would like to assume that Facebook was taking for granted the fact that traffic shaping is an essential tool for network health, but they sure didn't say so. We have to keep in mind what Facebook does, just as we did for Cisco, and remember that Facebook is already enjoying King of the Hill status as a Tier 1 service. Theirs is an easy position to take from where they sit. So here's where I have to try and compress all of this into a coherent conclusion. It is ferociously complicated, and there is no simple solution. Either a purely liberal or a purely conservative version of net neutrality would both be terrible for a majority of users. The best of all practical solutions, were we to live in some utopian universe where such a thing could actually be crafted, would still irk some percentage of users. The irony is that we all want the same thing: freedom to provide and obtain whatever we want with great performance over the internet. Why can't we have that? Because at the end of the day, it costs money and resources to provide it, and all the myriad parties involved all have different ideologies and conflicting notions for how best to provide it. That's the reality. What we're likely to end up with is probably little different from what we've always had: a certain amount of regulation, a certain amount of competition, and everybody wishing some component of their service was a little better. I have the antidote for you and all your friends who saw some ridiculous pseudoscience or pseudohistory documentary on TV last night and are now challenging you to respond to this misinformation they think they've learned. The antidote is Science Friction, the new feature film from Skeptoid Media. In this film, I talked to dozens of experts who were featured on these shows, but were edited out of context or otherwise had their words twisted. This happens more than you can imagine. The website is sciencefriction.tv, but there's an even more important reason you have to go to that website right now, which is easy because this podcast episode is over and you have a little break. Go to sciencefriction.tv on your browser. Check out the short video about the film, but then click the social media sharing buttons to exponentialize the number of people who see this. Maybe it will even get back to that friend of yours whose pet pseudo-documentary we're going to smash. ScienceFriction.tv. You're listening to Skeptoid, a listener-supported program. I'm Brian Dunning from Skeptoid.com.